Looking for work, better pay, better work environment? We can help. Call Kelly Jobs today at 502-425-7131 to speak with a recruiter today. Score a better job with us. Call 502-425-7131 or visit kellyjobs.com. That's kellyjobs.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here, on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
So there's all these websites now that they'll show a magic trick, and then the guy, the magician, explains how it works. Like, I found out how the trick that the one that explains how the woman appears in the chair. Hate to burst your bubble, but that's...
I didn't, because I wanted to stay enchanted.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't know if you want to... Sometimes I'm impressed with how whoever came up with the bits. That's pretty impressive. But a lot of them now... There's a lot of magicians doing things where it looks like people are floating or sailing through the air or whatever, and they're explaining how some of them are done, which I don't... Like you, I don't know if I want to know, but some of them are so amazing that whoever came up with the concept... Like, you see in the city streets, you ever see these guys that look like they're just floating?
It's the foot trick. Yeah. I know that one because I tried to learn how to do it.
What do you mean the foot trick? What are you talking about?
No, you just stand from an angle. You lift. Like, if you're facing me, I'm going to turn at like a 45-degree angle. I'm going to lift, like, you know, the leg closest to you. So let's just say that you're looking at me. I turn like 45 degrees to my right. I'm going to lift my left leg and then stand as high as I can on my tiptoes on my right foot. And it'll look like I'm levitating if done properly.
No, there's another one. They use mirrors in one. They use another one. It's this very clever, like, iron bar that goes up the pants leg. So it's like you look like you're sitting on air, but you're actually sitting on the thing that's hidden in your trousers. This flying ghost.
Hey-o.
But, yeah. Anyway, it's entertaining. I always like magic. I would find it entertaining and clever.
Didn't you do it in college?
I did it in college, yes. I did. Me and another guy had... I was doing it for fun. I was learning card tricks, and then somebody said, you should... So I did it like at, you know... Not exactly working the strip in Vegas. It was like for youth groups or for senior homes or stuff like that. But yeah, sometimes there was some really good audiences. It was fun. I enjoyed doing it. Anyway, a guy who understands the entertainment part. I don't know, there's not so much magic in it, but they're certainly entertaining. And our friend Dominic from Superstars, and he's got his own. You're a one-man conglomeration now, my friend, aren't you? How you doing?
Great. How are you, Bob? It's good to talk to you again, and Nick as well. And I love hearing Nick explain how to do the levitation thing, and I can picture him doing that just like I can, you know, picture him explaining how to do the quick change or the Russian bar trio. And actually, I'm kind of picturing him on the bar and going up.
Oh, I forgot about those guys. Yeah, they're good too. I forgot about them.
Oh yeah, that's I hadn't heard you mention those folks as well. So. And, you know, I was thinking about them because we represent them for baseball, and they're out of Quebec. Like you were talking about the circus, all the people have the circus backgrounds. And we met them, America's Got Talent, you keep talking about that too. We met them in 2008. That's how we connected with them in the first place. But it's not a good time to have the name the Russian Bar Trio in this day and age with all the crap going on with Russia and Ukraine and all that stuff. So they're kind of trying to go just now by RBT or the Quebec Bar Trio or something else, just because right off the bat they say, please welcome the Russian Bar Trio, and everybody just starts booing and throwing crap
yeah.
at them.
That's a good point. That's not a very, very time, and there's a time and place for everything, and this is clearly not the time to be named that, I would think. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
What's going on with you guys? I'm watching videos of you now. on. Well, just because you were joining the show, yeah. And people are sending us people are sending us other acts. I knew this is kind of your business. So, have you ever seen Rubber Boy? This guy's bizarro.
Oh yeah, Rubber Boy. It's fun to watch, but it's hard to watch. And
it really is
squeezing through a tennis racket. He's been at the bats, I think, years ago. And you all were talking about Red Panda. I don't know that Red Panda has ever performed in Louisville. I may be wrong. Of course, we're on the road so much that I don't know. But I think I would have heard about it. I don't know that that Red Panda has ever been here in Louisville. So I'm not sure about that one.
Didn't Greg use him for the bats once? Wasn't it tough because outdoors the wind blows the bowls? Or maybe I'm imagining that. I don't
maybe
know.
So. Maybe so, because Greg's brought in, like you all said, Greg's brought in so many at the bats, and they always do such a great job with keeping it fun for all the fans, just bringing in different fun stuff. So, yeah, they're Red Panda's always at the top of the list. And then you're talking about Gary, the amazing Slawdeck, the old guy. Met him last year at a women's basketball game at UK, and he's great. So I've been connecting with him on Facebook and talking to him, and he's all over the place. That's a great act as well.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm watching Rubber Boy now. You're right. It's physically, you feel pain watching him do some of the stuff he's doing. Oh my God. Wow. Yeah. All right, so let the cat out of the bag. Other than you, what are your favorite halftime shows? What's the best, do you think, that you've seen?
Well, Red Panda obviously is cool and it's great. And whether or not you think she might have some kind of magnets in the bowls and on her head to help her with her thing, you know, it's great. It's a good show. Christian and Scooby, that one's cool because you got a dog involved and he does all of his hand balancing and then all of a sudden the dog shows up and you get that cute factor. And so that's always a big hit. Let's see. You were talking about the balancing guy. I'm not a big fan of the balancing on the ladder on
it. Yeah.
Wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
That stuff. What's another? Quick Change, of course, was always a good one, and that's now with what's his name, David, passing away a few years ago with COVID. So they're no longer around. But I hear about Simon Says a lot, but I've never seen Simon Says. We've worked with
pretty amazing. It really is. He eliminates literally 60 people in about 3 minutes. I mean, you got to be really barking out instructions there.
I've never seen that one. Red Panda, we did a Memphis Grizzlies NBA playoff game a few years ago where we performed and she performed at the same game. So that was cool getting to meet her. Let's see what else I was going to take. Oh, Bob, the other day you were in Norman, Oklahoma. My daughter's there on the dance team, and I had told her to look for you. I'd sent her pictures of you and stuff, and she looked for you, and apparently you were – they didn't have you courtside. They had you up in the upper level like they do at Duke or something, I guess.
Yeah, not that far up. Duke's a crazy scenario, but that's the thing now. They're taking almost everybody off of the floor and putting them – some places, though, it's not a bad place to do it. Like Kentucky, if they put you at mid-court and, you know, near unobstructed view, it's fine. Because I'll be honest, Paul Rogers and I can barely see the games courtside because Kenny is right in front of us for the whole game. I mean, Paul, I'll let you in on a little inside baseball secret. He winds up calling probably half the game off the monitor because you literally can't see. I mean, it's just so I don't mind being up, you know. But Paul, I talked to Mark Kessler the other day. He had LSU, and basically the picture he sent me from where he was sitting, he could only see like half the court. I was like, are they playing half court today? What is this here? You have to clear the ball behind a 3-point line. And so I don't like that very much. But
she sent me after the. She's like, Dad, I never saw him. And then one of my cousins, he works on Press Row there in Norman, and apparently he had gone up to where you were and seen you taking a photo of you. I don't know if he said hi to you or not, but
yeah, anyway, he did.
I had people looking for you there in Norman, and hope you had a good time. I'm trying to think, which game was that? Was that OU in Kansas or Oklahoma State?
Oh no, Oklahoma beat it was the SEC Big 12
Alabama.
Challenge.
They beat
Alabama like a drum.
Which halftime show did they have there? Was that Russian Bar Trio? I think.
No, it wasn't.
Was not.
I don't remember. I usually watch. I don't remember which one was there. I'm trying to see which ones I've seen lately. I saw the F and A or something, whatever they're called, the Fargo and somewhere, this tumbling group from North Carolina, which was unbelievable. That was the last one I saw. Yeah, I don't remember what they had in Oklahoma, to be honest with you.
I could have sworn she sent me a photo of the Russian Bar Trio, our friends that were there maybe that game, doing the, maybe it's another game. I don't know.
I don't remember. I don't remember.
I know you've seen Russian Bar Trio. I think you were up in Connecticut when they were there a few years ago, maybe. I remember hearing you talk about it. Also, the firecrackers, you know, the little kids that do the jump
rope? Oh, yeah. They were here in Louisville. I missed them. I'm mad they made their annual trip here for the game this weekend.
We got to do something about them, though, because they do their shows and they don't charge anything, and that's not really – that doesn't help.
Get out of here. They don't charge you anything?
No. All they do is cover their bus fare. You know, they rent a tour bus or something, send them down, and they're all up in Cincinnati. I called the director one time asking them. I'm like, hey, how much do you guys charge, and would you want us to help represent you or whatever? He's like, oh, we just – the kids do it. They just enjoy doing it, and then the teams just pay for the bus, and they feed them. And
I'm like, that's God. You must be pissed. You're ruining it for the rest of us.
That's what I was telling them. I'm like, come on, man. You can't be doing this. It's putting the cramp in our style here.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Where are you going now?
We're doing USF on Wednesday as they're hosting Penny Hardaway in Memphis. And then Thursday we're at Troy in Alabama. And then Friday at Wright State. And then Saturday night, we might be at the St. Barnabas Men's League across from Seneca High School for the old man basketball league that I play in over there. So might be making a cameo appearance over there on Saturday night.
You going to play in costume? That would be interesting. That's like one of my favorite things about the ACC tournament every year is they play the mascot game. I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Very entertaining. All right, buddy.
We used to do fun things like that, and then we had an issue one time where some things got a little out of hand, got a little giddy, and we were not invited back.
Oh, my. The inside story of superstars. Yeah. That's entertaining.
Superstars. That's it. Well, nice talking to you. I always love turning on the radio and hearing you talk about halftime shows and everything else. So,
you're our official halftime show correspondent. That's
There you go. Keep me on that payroll. Keep those checks coming.
No. Because if you expect to get paid, I'm just going to call the kids from Firecrackers and let them come on and talk.
I love it. All right,
you guys, brother. Be well.
Appreciate
Take care.
All right. See you.
Oh, that's great.
That was awesome.
From superstars.
You know, The Daily Show has like correspondents, and a lot of comedians like got their start as a correspondent on that show. We need to have that V Show correspondents. Dominic is an official like halftime / mascot correspondent. we have different like consigliaries. Maybe we can make it more stereotypical and refer
like
to them that way. But yeah, we have V Show consigliaries, and he's definitely one of them. Hey, do you want to hear Stephen A. Smith and Jay Williams fight about Kyrie Irving for 2 minutes?
Oh, let's see which team I join. Since I didn't hear this, I know he's ranting about something else. Well, that's his job, but I didn't hear this one. So, okay, let's take a listen.
Daily news?
No, but
that's not going to happen.
We put a different kind of onus on our athletes than we do, and you made mention of that on your podcast.
I don't deny that.
Wait, so first off, I'm not the one.
I don't deny that.
I'm being sensitive.
I don't deny that.
But you're the one that seemed very emotional.
Oh, my God.
And the subject matter, Stephen A.
Go ahead, Jay.
Come on, man.
Go ahead, Jay.
Come on, man.
Go ahead, Jay.
I'm not sitting up here on national TV absolving Kyrie Irving of every decision. I'm not going back and reaccounting every decision. I'm just saying how it's interesting to me. It just carries such a bigger momentum, in particular with you,
more so than anybody else.
Stephen A.
Well, you know what? What I would ask you is do me a favor. Stop telling us what you find interesting and just tell us what you feel.
No, my job is to be
interesting. You say, I find it interesting. You always say that. Say what you're saying. What are you saying?
What did I just say?
What are you saying?
What am I saying? I just said what I'm saying, Stephen A.
Which is,
and I'm not allowed to say what I find interesting.
Of course you are.
But like once again,
I invite you on the show to say what's interesting.
He thinks you're too preoccupied with Kyrie, too hard on Kyrie.
Did I Bridget Kyrie Irving last week before he demanded a trade? We were talking football. How many times have I mentioned Kyrie Irving over the last few weeks?
I don't seem to be the one being triggered right now.
Well, I'm always triggered.
No, you're not.
Very bad.
Oh, yes, I am. No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you are not.
Okay.
I've seen you. No, I watch your show every day.
So what
are
you?
Are we talking about Kyrie or is this personal?
It seems personal.
I don't want it to be personal.
What seems personal?
It seems personal for you.
For me with Kyrie?
Yes.
You
1,000,000%.
You of all people with all the interest you have got the nerve to sit here in national television and tell me I'm getting personal with a player? I don't lose no sleep.
I didn't say you lose sleep.
I don't lose any sleep over Kyrie.
I didn't say you lose sleep.
I'm passionate about the subjects I'm passionate about. I don't accuse you of getting personal when you take the
You have accused me of getting personal.
Oh, my God.
You have, Stephen
A. Can I go on the court?
I'm going to leave it.
Can I go on the court real quick? Because I'd like to. Because when we started off.
We both got a lot to say.
All right.
You do?
Yeah.
You do?
Okay,
just say
guys,
it, Jay.
I'm
not in here for that.
Just say it, Jay.
I'm on your show.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. We're all colleagues. We're all teammates. When we started off.
Legs is just sitting there like, I don't
know. Tim Legler, I never heard his voice. I didn't even know he was there.
Legs is just sitting there like, it's a tennis match. Molly, God bless her, is doing yeoman's work trying to keep that show on the rails. And Legs is just like,
I wonder back how much of it. I wonder how much of it is the Duke thing. Because, you know, the Duke, God bless him, may stay together. So Jay is going to defend his guy, even if he's indefensible. That's how I feel about it. I think the guy is just I don't care. He scores 60 points a game. You know, it's one of those things that if you've got that kind of talent and people still kind of when you're heading for the door are saying goodbye and good riddance, it's not on them. It's on you. So there's that. So my impression listening to that is, okay, if he's going to be a guy that either you can overlook all of his eccentricities or you want to take him to task for those. I want to take him to task for those because that's just how I see it. It's how I saw it with when he had LeBron, you know, when they were together and they could have been trying to work towards a dynasty. The guy's got – I mean, you can say that to some degree about Durant too. I mean, you know, he was – Golden State, they win in championships, but for some reason he was still pissed, maybe because he wasn't the guy. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, I just think he says such foolish things, and you know, I don't want to make it political, but the guy I find it hard to believe that you could see the world as he sees it, that the earth's flat, I mean, and get into Duke. forget about political things, because I know the vaccine will be a trigger for some people, but his view on the vaccine. But, I mean, come on, please don't tell me that you believe there's some credence to the world is not round, it's flat. I mean, that's...
Okay, just hear me out on this.
But then the other thing is, Jay is a little disingenuous. It's kind of like... I don't know. Let me see if I can pick somebody. It's kind of like, yeah, here we go. This would be a good one. It's kind of like going on Guy Fieri's show and saying, you know, I can't help it. You seem to spend a lot of time going to just dives, drive-ins, and what's the other thing? And then he's saying, well, yeah, that's what I do. No, but you don't really see that. I see you sometimes, and I see you eating in a really nice restaurant. I know. So don't tell me that, you know, that this doesn't trigger you. I mean, Jay's talking about he watches the show every day. I mean, Stephen could go on a rant about fried rice or white rice. I mean, he's just, that's what his job is. That's what he does. And the fact that that's not his stage persona is like, yeah, okay, there's a million people like that. That's his act, for lack of a better word. And it is. I mean, it's not to imply that he doesn't truly love sports or have a passion for what he's saying, but he knows that's what he does. That's what he's known as. He's known, you know, like Stephen A. has grown on me. I used to find that
same
irritating because I think
to like him strictly for like basketball and takes and like his opinions on that, specifically the Knicks, and then I would get really annoyed with him at times with all the other stuff. But then as he started body bagging Skip Bayless on the regular, I was like, you know what, I kind of like the Stephen A guy.
But the point I'm making is whether you like him or not, when you talk to him as if you know that's not his designed stage persona, and then he has the audacity to say watches every day, and Jay comes on and he's deliberately talking so calmly. I didn't understand any of that. I mean, I'm just going to be candid with you. I don't know whether it's Jay behind closed doors kind of having a view, which I think is what Stephen A. is suggesting. Say what you want to say, man. Don't hide behind "I find interesting." Is it implied that, you know, because Kyrie's black, that, you know, he's gets overly scrutinized for these thoughts? I don't know. When I can't speak for everybody, and to some degree, you can't even 100% speak for yourself. I don't know. Maybe there are things that are, you know, you perceive things in ways that you're not aware of, but I don't think it's got anything to do with it. I think the guy's just an idiot. I mean, it's just he's making maximum money. You know, he's played, I think, in like half the games for whatever reasons, whether it's his viewpoint on the vaccine or whatever it is. There's no thought in watching him that he's ever got an awareness or a value for the team, which is what team sports are supposed to be all about. You know, he with the whole thing with LeBron, it looked like he was bitter that he wasn't the man on that team. You know, he's got a chance to, you hear these guys basically bearing their souls to have a chance to win one championship. You know, other players that have had great careers, and, you know, and he's just in there sourpuss the whole time about that whole situation. He doesn't care about his teammates very much. If that's, you know, political statement, okay. If you want to, you know, but if that's what he wants to feel, then I want to feel that, well, you don't have a whole lot of value for your team. I mean, there are a whole bunch of guys that probably, given their druthers, would say, well, I really would rather not have gotten the vaccine. But for the fact of the matter is, you're part of a team. You're getting very, very well paid. And it doesn't mean you should do any damn thing. If they said, you know, we're going to use Elbonian Airlines from now on to save some money. That's the airline in Dilbert where they just have a giant slingshot and they slingshot you into the city.
The difference between first class and coach is they don't intentionally try to launch you into a rock.
Right, you try and find some much softer landing place. So, I mean, I'm trying to be respectful of all that, but I guess when he came out and was just hell-bent that the world is flat, that, I mean, that to me says you're kind of a... And then you couple that with... Because there are some guys that are, say, goofy things, but they're lovably goofy. That's not him. He's just... I don't know. He's just, and he could have. Maybe he doesn't want that persona. But when he was Uncle whatever his name was in the Pepsi commercial,
well, Uncle Drew, yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious. I was like, all right, this guy gets it. You know, you like to see some people who
made a movie and everything. Talk about face to heel turn. There's
that's
a
exactly
stat
it.
That came out, and I mean, this isn't all Kyrie's fault by any stretch. I mean, they've been injury prone, but in the 3 years or so that him and KD have been in Brooklyn together, they've played 74 games together.
Yeah, I mean, that's
74
that's
games together.
About. That's exactly what I'm talking
Andy,
about.
I think Andy made this point, and Mark Lieberman's in studio with us. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. I also have 30 more seconds of Stephen A. roasting Jay Williams, which is fun from earlier today. But I think Andy made this point. Ben Simmons and Kyrie Irving have completely screwed over the players in the next collective bargaining agreement. I mean, like, seriously. I mean, the owners have got to be like, wait a minute. We spent all this money and you played 74 games?
Back? Right. No, I agree. I was never a bit. I was a, you know, I'm a, I thought Kyrie, like I said, he was obviously a very skilled player. And the Uncle Drew ads in the movie, I was like, all right, this guy's funny. He gets it. That's great. But then he made a complete heel turn. Ben Simmons, I have never been a fan of, going back to his LSU days. That was a team that just screamed dysfunction, and he was right in the middle of it. Although he wasn't doing a solo act, that whole team was dysfunctional. But, you know, I've never been a big fan of that, to be honest with you. And so I can't say I'm brokenhearted at that. By the way, the New York Knickerbockers got a win over those Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, that was a good game. I watched it last night.
They were down like 19 in the first quarter.
I was at the new and improved, if you will, Spring Street bar with Moon Mullins last night. We moved a couch.
Oh, very nice.
And then we went out with our significant others. Very, very good burger there. Very good burger.
By the way, I apologize up front because I guarantee you somewhere in there you've gotten texts about it, and I haven't mentioned it really at all. I mean, the Indiana win, that's as close to a throwback, if you will, as any game you'll see, because obviously they've always had that great rivalry going back to Bob Knight and Gene Cady. About that, some of you probably don't even know who he is. You know, that's always been, they were always taking kind of good-natured digs at each other, but they were definitely taking digs at each other, and the games were big. Indiana obviously usually had the upper hand in terms of where they were in the national landscape, and great crowd, sold-out crowd, all of that. So that was a very, very significant win. And I'm happy. Mike Woodson, I got to know very, very slightly. He was part of a V Foundation fundraiser for us, and he's just a pretty good guy. And, you know, he certainly has made the transition from the Knicks to a pretty good college coach. So it can be done, evidently.
I mean, he was at the helm for the brightest spot of the Knicks the last decade or so. I mean, well, the exception of Tibbs's playoff year, when, you know, but he was, yeah, Woodson. I think Woodson has friends in New York, right? I mean, his tenure there wasn't looked at as a train wreck.
No, not at all. I don't think he's viewed as, I don't know, there's a bunch of...
not that many bright spots for the Knicks as of late.
Hey, no, who invited you in to talk?
Nick just gave me the cue. He gave me the cue to chime in. So,
well, you're right about that. It's been a Coach of the Month club there for a long, long time. God bless. Every franchise seemingly has that one guy that's above reproach. For the Knicks, it's Red Holtzman, who won the only two championships in their team's history and then came out of retirement to take them from... It was very sad for us because we all loved Willis Reed as a player, but as a coach, the team had gotten away from him, and Red came back and made them at least respectable again. So, yeah, but that's a long time ago. These are names. Half the listeners probably don't know who the hell they are, but that's interesting. You know, I wanted to do one other thing, and we're going to have I wouldn't mind Mark's input on this. This could be your Twitter poll, Nick, or it wouldn't be a poll, but get input. I was trying to think of guys that I don't remember who the athlete was. It was a baseball player. That's who it was, but I don't remember which one, sadly. I was reading baseball free agency stuff. And what players have gone from... you'll see a very prominent player who is great at the top of his game, and then he either opts out for free agency or gets traded, salary cap thing, whatever. And he goes somewhere else, and he's just not that good. I mean, it's like you go, what the hell happened to that guy? He just fell off the face of the earth. But then there's those very rare guys who then come back from that and are very prominent players again. That is a really rare guy. It's not a matter of a heel turn, face turn, heel turn. It's got nothing to do with their personality. It's got to do with their effectiveness. That, you know, these guys are really at the elite level in their sport, and then for some reason, and they just, it's not like it's a gradual decline, it just drops, and they're not heard from again. But every once in a while, there's a guy who then comes back from that and is a prominent player again. And I was trying to, I wish I could find the baseball guy, because it'd be a good example.
Is this inspired by Julius Randle?
He could be kind of on the list, and it's typical. Maybe it's because it's in New York and everything gets magnified. But I was thinking of Kurt Warner. I mean, Kurt Warner was really, really good, obviously. Then he went to the Giants, and it was like he was terrible. He was fumbling and losing games, and that guy's done. You know, and then he came back and he played really well for the Cardinals again, didn't he? Wasn't that where he wound up at the end of his career?
He went to a Super Bowl, lost to the Steelers in the Super Bowl.
He was very good again.
I think he was the MVP that year.
Yeah, so who else? Randle, I don't know. Did he drop off that much? I don't know. Maybe that might be a decent
thing. He had some injuries in L.A. I mean, I know that contributed, but yeah.
But I'd like to know, because fans always remember somebody like that. But they're rare. Usually, whether it's perception or I don't know what the reason is, but whenever seemingly they kind of drop off the face of the earth, they drop off the face of the earth. You know who's a guy? I'll tell you who's a guy. Another guy. You got to be old enough to remember this. But there was a guy who was a very good college player. It's a great, interesting story. Both his parents, if I'm not mistaken, were blind. And yet he wound up being a really good quarterback. And he was playing for the Patriots, where he was good, but then seemingly he lost everything. He was gone, and he was not a prominent player. And then he went to the Raiders and went to the Super Bowl. Jim Plunkett. Plunkett played for, I think, the 49ers, and then might have been the Patriots, where he seemingly fell off the face of the earth. And then he came back, and he was a Super Bowl winner, if I'm not mistaken, with Oakland. And
they beat the Eagles.
Was it?
Yeah, they beat the Eagles.
They beat the Eagles, mm-hmm. Yeah. The Eagles Super Bowl appearance that they did not get win. And, but, yeah, that's a good example. That one just popped into my head. I don't know others that are like that. Those are the two. Oddly, they're both quarterbacks. Maybe there's something to that. But Plunkett started his career with the Patriots, and he was good. He was very good. Then he went to the 49ers, where he semi-sucked. And then he wound up in Oakland and won the Super Bowl. He actually won two Super Bowls, in fact. It was the Super Bowl MVP in one of those years. So, I don't know. He's got the East Tide. He's one of only, I don't know how many quarterbacks there are, by the way. We want to know Wednesday on a Monday. He's tied for the longest touchdown pass in NFL history, which is not possible to be exceeded because it was 99 yards. So there you go. Oh, here we go. All right, we'll play a little over-under contest with our two voices. How many times has there been a 99-yard offensive touchdown in the NFL history?
Damn. Offensive.
Tony Dorsett had one. I remember that.
Okay, let me look that up.
And you have one from Jim Plunkett.
Let's see. Who was the one you said?
Tony Dorsett.
Okay, let's see.
Did Adrian Peterson have one?
He might have.
The list right here.
I don't know.
You're the trivia guy. You're better at this than me.
I don't know. This is tough.
You're wrong about it. I'm sorry. Well, you know what? These are 99-yard pass plays.
Okay.
So how many of those have there been? The most recent of which, just FYI, was Eli Manning to Victor Cruz.
Wow.
December 24th, 2011. So it hasn't happened in a long, long time.
So did you give us an over-under of what we're going to see?
Yes, over-under. So one of you guess, and the other guys will either guess that it's too high or too low.
How many
in the history of the National Football League, the first of which was all the way back in 1939?
Nick, I'll say four.
I was going to guess seven, so I'm going to go over.
Yeah, it's but more than you think, 13.
Really? Wow! I would not have gone that high.
But how about that though? We've gone a long time with the propensity of how prolific is the word I'm looking for? The passing game has become. You would think there would be more nowadays, but there hasn't been one. This is like the longest gap between 99-yard touchdown passes going all the way back to early in the league when they didn't throw the ball nearly as much. The first one was in 1939. The next one wasn't until 1963, 24 years. But then they came somewhat regularly, 1966, 1968, 1983, 15 years.
Secondaries notoriously suck.
94, 95, 2002, and then the last one was 2011. So we are on 13 years now and counting for this. And so there you go. So we just educate you here. We're going to talk about things, including Indiana's win, Louisville's near miss, which, by the way, is another oxymoron. If you're on a plane, you want to be on a near miss. It's actually a near hit because you don't want to be on a near miss. That would be a collision.
You want to be on a near hit.
Yeah, so you don't want that one. But anyway, we'll talk about that. Come back here as we roll on a Monday here on ESPN 680 105.7.
Be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
Are you finished?
I think you allowed me to talk for a minute and 30 seconds.
Well, listen, you want more?
I mean, I give you more. It ain't a minute and 30 seconds.
You get plenty of time to talk on the show.
I think you allowed me to finish my point. Thank you.
Exactly. And after I finish, we're going to come back and make sure you get more time.
Okay.
It's a bunch of BS you talking about right now.
It's not a bunch of BS. Just because you label it BS does not make it BS.
I'm calling it BS.
Okay.
I'm calling it.
That's your perspective.
That's right. You're damn right, and it matters.
Media target.
Wow.
It's been a wild one.
I'm echoing in my head now. What did you do to the setting? See, here we go. I told you never touch the control.
That was me. That wasn't you. That was me.
Every commercial, you're a little hot, you're a little loud. You sound like a guy from Bavaria. I hit a button and we come back, and then I'm getting a farm report.
No, that was me. See,
are you guys fabricating a Stephen A., Jay Williams moment here?
Oh, we could never. at our most heightened, we could never compare with
no,
that.
No, see, what happened was this. See, if you say something now, you'll hear it in your head. Say something.
Hello.
See? Echo.
Hello. Number two. Shortstop, Derek. Cheetah.
Yeah, see? No, and then I take it out. Oh, yeah, I just had audition in your ear. That was my bad. That was my boy. Right. That was me.
So here's a little rabbit hole, and then we'll get a Mark's impression on this, because I think it's a source of legitimate discussion. Again, because Jim Plunkett came up, I happened to hit a button, Jim Plunkett, and boom. There's an article from, it's actually now about 4 years old, but still timely. He played 15 seasons in the NFL. The bio I laid out for you, rookie of the year with the Patriots, went downhill. They traded him to San Francisco, wasn't very good there. Went to the Raiders and won 2 Super Bowls with them, a legend in their franchise history. He is now in a situation in his life where he said, it's no fun being in this body right now. Everything hurts. He takes so many drugs. There are at least 13 for various health issues, heart, blood pressure, and most of the others related to the injuries he suffered on the playing field. He played football for so long, the doctors have told him it was the equivalent of being in 50 car wrecks a week for 20 straight weeks in a year. He's undergone 18 surgical procedures to repair his back. He has artificial knees, artificial shoulder, is in great pain. Now, we understand that one of the reasons that they shouldn't have contact in games like the Pro Bowl, so that was a great decision. But it leads to a topic that's not football-related that I want to see what Mark's thought is. They are now managing the workload of players in the NBA to the point where it's become a source of great contention for the everybody, literally the players, the Players Association, the coaches, the fans, the broadcasters, where they will sit guys on certain nights. They're managing the stress on their bodies. My gut reaction is to say I don't have a problem with it because this is what they do for a living. It would be, you wouldn't ask a guy playing in the New York Philharmonic to carry his violin in a plastic trash bag. You know, you take care of your, quote-unquote, your instrument. Well, the players, the body is their instrument. And they're being asked to play, more games than they ever were in history. There's more playoff rounds. It goes on and on. And to some degree, it's an even more physically demanding game. The players are bigger. They're stronger. They're faster. The problem is for many people, and I get it, that with so many teams in the league now, like when I was a kid, there were, I believe, like 12 teams in the league. So if you bought tickets to a game and you wanted to see a good player on the opposing team, frankly, you can get mad that he's not playing that night, but it wouldn't be your only chance. Now there are kids that idolize Steph Curry or whoever, and they come to town once. And the tickets are astronomical. I mean, there wasn't a big commitment to buy a ticket back in those days. It is now. So the fans correctly say, hey, I bought the ticket largely because I wanted to see Steph Curry, or I wanted to see, pick anybody, Luka Doncic, and they come to town once, and they don't play that night, you're really getting screwed. I hate to say it because I think there's a lot of merit to that, but it's kind of like if you go buy a ticket to a Broadway play because you want to see Sutton Foster, and it winds up that the night you go, she can't go, she's sick or something, and the understudy, they don't give you your money back. They just give you that little slip of paper in the playbill and it says tonight the part of Mark Lieberman will be played by Andy Sweeney. That's the way it goes. And you pays your money, you takes your chances. The argument that people give back to me is, well, yeah, but usually that's because the person is sick or got hurt. There's a lot of dancing if it's a certain show and they can't perform. This is just guys perfectly healthy taking the night off. And you hear people passionately arguing both ways. This is not even by generational lines. The older players generally weigh in with, I play, you're paying to get out so much, we get more money than we could ever dream of. Go out, get your ass out there and play. But the others say, well, listen, how do we define success? We define it by the postseason. And if you're going to wear your guy down, you got no chance in the postseason. So, Mark, where do you weigh in on that thorny topic?
These guys spend so much time in the offseason training to get to that next contract for the preseason and so on. It's a new normal. So it's tough because there's so many games. There's 82 regular season games, which I feel is way too many. But they're not going to change that. They're not, because of the money and so on. If there's a way to alert fans, if you can have something where they can know in a day in advance, but it's the new normal. And it's a shame because you see a lot of times where a kid goes to a game to see his hero and he's not playing. And of course, back in the day, that wasn't the case. But how much they're putting their body through in the off season, from preseason to 82 games, the training is so much different now. There really is an off season for these guys. That, yeah, during the regular season, if something's bothering them, or even if it's not, I just need to, we just played back-to-back at Golden State, at Portland, and now we're traveling to Utah, I need a night. And it's the way that it is, and it's not going to change.
See, you hit on something that's so true, because I remember reading the stories of the guys and the teams when I was a kid. Almost all of them had off-season jobs. I mean, it was, you know, now they don't have an off-season job. I mean, they're working as hard, if not harder, in the summer than they are during the season. So you got to give your body a chance to recuperate somewhere. But you hit it something that's a big point with me, which is they play too damn many games. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yep.
And what the owners will say, though, again, that's why I find this topic so interesting, because, you know, for all of us who don't have to pay the bills, the saying in the league is the regular season is for the players. The playoffs are for the owners.
Right,
because if you, those are all extra games, and they get the money, and the TV ratings are higher, and but they have to play. Well, if they're going to pay these players what they're now demanding and arguably deserving, the owners say, okay, well, that's fine, but you've got to give us a chance to earn that money back to pay you, and the way we do that is by playing 41 home games, and even if not the home games, you know, you're giving TV content, so that's, and the TV deal is now paying a lot of the bills. So fine, we'll cut the games back, but you want to, you know, we'll cut the games back 20%. You want to cut your salaries by 20%? You know, so it's a tough thing, but I'm afraid they're going to kill the goose that's laying the golden egg right now, because it is too damn many games, and it takes away from the specialness of it. And I was thinking about how we used to watch sports, and I realized it was a different generation, but Mark, when a game was on, man, you were pretty jazzed up because you didn't get it all the time, and you know, we knew the players. I wonder how many of the kids really know the players. I mean, other than maybe a staff or something like that. But, I mean, hell, I could probably give you the starting five of almost every team in the league when I was in middle school.
I remember as a kid, just, you know, on a Sunday afternoon, hear CBS and, you know, get home and watch the Celtics versus the Sixers and Dr. J and all that kind of stuff. That was great. And you look forward to it. Now it obviously is saturated. But I think the gambling aspect has entered the fray, because so many people are betting on individual players and points every night.
Yep.
And that's a huge factor as well. So a game number 57 between Detroit and Orlando, which doesn't have any interest, now all of a sudden the gambling aspect comes in, and people are betting on different things during that game. So that's part of the narrative as well. It's a lot to it.
All right. As always, when we get Coach Mark Lieberman from Collegiate on with us here, we got to get an update on your team. Since I saw you last, what's going on?
We are now 12-9. We won at the buzzer versus Beth Haven. What was that, Thursday night? Our senior, Wills McGregor, hit a shot for him. It was fantastic. Nice. Really excited. His brother actually kicked it to him, and he drove it and hit a pull-up jump shot, and that's it. 12-9. We play tomorrow at Louisville Mail.
Oh, wow.
That's the update.
That will be.
Yes. And we've got the Lieberman, Maxwell Lieberman Classic this Friday. And I have on my social media, there's people who can't make the games. There's a link to donate to the March of Dimes as well.
Very nice. And Mail should be quite a challenge. You know, they have they've been known to crank out some athletes in the day.
They have a very good team. So there is no shot clock in high school basketball. So for those attending, if you need to boo, it's fine. Go ahead.
You can do my brother's line when they played Houston. If we win the tip, we might not shoot till Tuesday. So I wish you, where's that game, at Mail or your
place?
That game
is at Mail, yes.
Oh, all right, well, good luck.
Well, thank you.
All right, let's talk a little bit with a team that we rarely talk about, and there's people in this area, obviously, that are fans, but how about that Indiana win the other day? Indiana-Purdue, man, I felt like a kid again with the atmosphere in that building, and those two teams, longtime rivals. How about what they did there?
You hark back to some of the stuff with, like, Gene Katie and how good those Purdue teams are, and that team is really, really good. To pivot real quick, I loved what Zach Edey did. They were talking about the turnover late by their point guard, Brandon Smith, and he grabbed the microphone and kind of took it. It's all on us. It's not just one play. And that just shows the maturity of that team with Purdue, because I think they're fantastic. I think they're going to make a big run in March. But great win for Indiana. This area is starving for those type of games. And I watched some of it, and I just thought it was a fantastic college basketball game.
Yeah, it is definitely a throwback to a different time with how that rivalry was perceived. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think he's one of the most underappreciated coaches in the country, Matt Painter.
I agree.
He's a very likable guy, but he's a great competitor. And I don't think, you know, every team completely reflects the, kind of the makeup of their coach. But more and more you see that as, you know, if a team is defined as defensively oriented or offensively oriented, or they crash the boards, or they're very patient, or they want to play up-tempo or whatever, it's very reflective of their personality. And I think that's what Purdue is. They are just a – I'm not surprised that Edie would say that at the press conference, because that seems to be their mindset. They are very much about team, and they they've always had a great – seemingly, I can't say always, every team. He's been there a long time. But they have a great esprit de corps, for lack of a better mm-hmm. word. How about that? They really – they do look out for each other, and that wouldn't surprise me that he would say that.
Greg Carey, who was his assistant, is now the head coach at Mercer, and I've been close with him for a long time. And he would always talk to me, and I've met Matt at recruiting events and so on, and he is really he's just a defensive-minded coach, loves to have his guys gritty. People don't realize because they run such great stuff, but he, you know, they get after it, and they guard really well.
Yeah, and they, and again, that's where you see that mindset of, you know, you can only be a really good defensive team if you have that mindset and the confidence that, listen, I'm going to do my job or try and do my job, but if I have a breakdown, somebody's going to cover for me, and they do that extraordinarily well. They really do. So,
you know, great defensive plays happen when someone makes a mistake, and you watch them. There's always guys who are helping the helper and always in right positions, and they're fun to watch from that standpoint, from a coach's perspective, because they really – they can get stops when they need it, and in that conference, obviously, you need to get them, and they just do a great job as far as getting their kills and just fun to watch.
Sometimes you get to hear the show before you come on, sometimes you don't, so I don't know whether you heard it or not, but we opened the show by something that I was just struck with, that this year, and again, how do you define the Blue Bloods? So we started by doing that. We went through who's got the most Final Four appearances in history, and it's people you'd expect, obviously Carolina and Duke and Kentucky and blah, 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 but the fact is, if you go to like the top 12 of those teams, it's not a complete remote possibility that not one of them is in the Final Four this year, and that's rare. And but again, Purdue is, you know, they're not one of the Blue Bloods in that regard of the most Final Four appearances, but they have had a great history, of course. If you had to pick one team to be in the Final Four, I assume it would be them, but what are the chances of that the other three are non-traditional basketball teams or even teams that have never made a Final Four before, like Tennessee's never been in the Final Four? You know, so how does the landscape look to you? What are you looking for as we go down the last month of the regular season?
I've mentioned it a few times. I think Xavier is they're loaded. I think they've got size. They have senior leadership. They shoot the ball well. They can score. I think Coach Miller has kind of morphed into more of, he understands the kind of team he has. He's always been a defensive-centric kind of coach, but you watch them play, they have it all. I think they can shoot the ball. I think they run the floor really well. And to your point, it's wide open. You know, in the years past, hey, here comes Gonzaga. You know they're going to be there. You know this Baylor team is – right now, I watched Houston last night, and I think they're good. But, you know, I'm not saying that they're a lock for the Final Four. And Purdue, to me, is probably one of the better teams. I've watched Alabama play. They're really good, but they're streaky as well. So from the standpoint of saying – well, it's going to be no matter what, it's going to come down to a North Carolina or a Kansas or whatnot. I think it's wide open. I think this is the year where you can watch one or two teams squeeze into the Final Four that's completely not even talked about, that's not that they're not relevant, but they're the type of team that might just be like a VCU to make a run or a Butler, and then they become the type of team that's going to be making a year-in, year-out type of appearance into the NCAA tournament.
You know what's interesting to me is that so many things get lives of their own and then don't jibe with what the reality is. For example, you know, the people who'd say, well, the field is so big that, you know, it doesn't matter, what the conference tournaments don't matter. And to some degree, there's truth to that. Like, for you to get in the tournament, it's not make or break time. For some teams it is. You know, it's one of those, they better make a deep run in their conference tournament, they're going to be closed out. But by and large, we have a pretty good idea who the field's going to be made up of. But what is interesting to me is that how often the national champion at least plays in their conference championship game and very often wins it. And so there's a lot of questions that that poses to me that I'll pose to you. One is, with what's going on right now in the transfer portal and everything else, do you think that will still prove to be as important? And how big a deal do you think it is that not only are you from a Power 6 conference, but that you're from a strong Power 6 conference? Like, to be honest with you, this is one of the weaker years for the ACC in a long time. They weren't particularly great last year either, but you know, it's another one where they're not that strong. And I don't want to fall into the trap of saying, well, they're not strong because Duke and Carolina aren't as good as they have been in the past. But I think
that's a normal trap for people, right? If those two aren't,
if they're not good, the league's not good.
Exactly.
But I think there's merit to it this year, not because of them, but because if you look at the Sagarin ratings, I mean, they really, and the voters too. I mean, they really don't have. I mean, the two highest teams in the league are not even ranked. I mean, Pittsburgh and Clemson aren't even ranked. Right. So put all that together. When if you were looking at this tournament, even knowing before the field who it's going to be, how important do you think it is that it is that trend that you still got to be in a championship game from a power conference, and how much do you think that if the power conference you're from is not as strong, it compromises your chances?
Well, I think it's always important to the coaches and the players to win their conference championships, no matter what anybody says out there. That's always important internally. I've been a part of that, and that's something, you know, we had lost to South Florida late in the season, and then we came back and won the conference or lost in the conference championship. And that's, I think, getting there is you can use that obviously for your team to kind of stoke them to moving forward. But it's different because you're going to see different names every year, like you mentioned, with the transfer portal. I think teams are definitely invested in winning their conference championships, but it's going to be different in the years to come. And that's, you pose a great question, because it's going to just be a different landscape as far as all these teams are concerned, because those Power Sixes, it's just not going to be as much a factor with everybody transferring.
Yeah, it's the times they are changing. There's no question about that. But and I don't know, I'm not of the ilk that all change is bad. It's making things worse. But it definitely changes the landscape. One place it does. Another thing I was going to talk about at the top of the show, and certainly appropriate to get to now. You know, Jim Boeheim's a very interesting guy.
Oh boy,
he is a guy. When he first got into the business, he was really. I mean, all coaches have to have a certain degree of confidence, but he was almost like arrogant and aware of it. I mean, and he got remarried. Julie, his new wife, people credit her for making him a human being. she's a great person, and he's been a lot more likable. You know, I think he's misunderstood a lot. I remember, maybe Rick told you the story. Rick told me the story that when he, you know, it was his first job, obviously. He was,
mm-hmm.
He was
out in Hawaii. Or then Syracuse.
Syracuse. Yep. Syracuse. Yeah, well, he came from. But, I guess he was full time. He was the interim head coach there.
That's
anyway,
correct.
His first big time job, let's put it that way. He goes to Syracuse, works with Jim Boeheim. And he said that, you know, this is a different era. Like when you're recruiting, he was trying to save money like everybody else was. So they'd go on the road and they would be sharing a hotel room. And, you know, more often than not, probably a motel room. They weren't staying at the Ritz. And he said he remembers that he would occasionally wake up in the middle of the night and Jim would be sitting at the foot of his bed with the TV on so low because he didn't want to bother Rick, and he was be watching late movies. That's what he liked to do. And the point was, he's for a guy who's, you know, reached the pinnacle of his profession, he was a very simple man. They I don't know if you heard this story. He said they were on the beach. They were on vacation together right after, not right after, but right now. Oh, you're sending me something. All right. But the fact of the matter is they were sitting on the beach, mm-hmm. all four of them, and they were talking about, you know, where would their ideal place to live be? You know, his wife, Joanne, said something, and I don't remember what they said. It's irrelevant, but Boeheim went last. And he really paused, and they were like, oh, my God, you're going to say Syracuse, aren't you? And he said, yeah. they were mentioning, like, Hawaii or somewhere, you know, on a Caribbean beach. And, you know, he wanted to stay in Syracuse.
Yeah.
So he's a glutton simple
for,
guy.
Yeah, glutton for punishment there.
But the fact is, he came out and said something that he's not the only one to say, but I don't understand it. He said that Wake Forest and who was the other, Pitt, they mm-hmm. bought good teams. I mean, the NCAA really, somebody needs to step up and decide, you know, it's like they're trying to be a little bit pregnant right now, and it looks ridiculous that these kids can make money, but the coaches are all up in arms. They take umbrage at the fact, like Steve Forbes at Wake Forest was like, we didn't buy any players. And Boeheim said, our whole NIL thing is like $20,000. And my point is, why should that be a source of shame right now? They okayed it. So if you have people who are interested enough that would want to make it so that they want to pay a kid $400,000 to come and sit at their car wash like three Saturdays a year or something, who cares? They made it legal now. But the idea, the thing is so stupid to me, Mark, it actually angers me that they get mad. Like the kid at Florida, wasn't Florida, right, the quarterback?
Yep.
Who reneged, but he didn't renege, he said they reneged on what they offered him, so he went somewhere else, and people are like, oh, this is what's wrong with college. Well, let me ask you a question. When's the last time you took a job and didn't ask him what it was going to pay?
Right.
I mean, who would do that? I mean, it sounds great. So he's coming. Well, excuse me. What am I going to get paid? I can't tell you that. I can't promise you anything. Who would do that? So these kids do it, and they get railroaded for it. And the coaches, you know, get all up in arms. Like, well, we didn't pay anybody. I mean, why? Because they didn't mention it in the recruiting process or something. That makes no sense to me. And Boeheim just railing at it, implying that like somehow that's why they're stuck in the middle of the league.
I have Where sound do we, from today.
Well, because they're losing. And that's it. Because every recruiting trip now, whether it's might not come from the kid, but it might be the AAU coach, the parent, somebody associated in that group. What's the NIL situation?
And that's
part of it now.
And it should be part of it. I mean, if it's like I said, it would be like you not asking what the job is. I mean, you know, I know we talked about you got a lot of extenuating reasons for wanting to come back to Louisville, but I imagine they told you what you were going to get paid at collegiate before you took the job, or they just say, you know, come and take it. We can't tell you what you're going to make, but come and take the job. I mean, it's just it defies logic. Things that defy logic piss me off in sports, and so that's one. Now Nick says we have some sound.
Is yeah, we got to take a break. We're woefully late for one, but Jim Boeheim kind of backtracked a little bit on his comments, but when he asked about it today during the Zoom conference, he said this, very short.
I'm not going to talk about any of these conversations or who I have talked to or haven't talked to.
Okay. I love that whisper, okay. But Steve Forbes...
Who said the okay? Him?
No, whoever the moderator, whoever asked the question was. Yeah, it sounded like it. But this was Steve Forbes' response.
No, there's very few people that respect Coach more than I do. He knows that. I've said it publicly. You know, he contacted me. I was watching, I recommend watching The Recruit on Netflix. It's about the CIA lawyer. I was watching that after Carolina Duke, and then my life got interrupted there for a while. But Coach reached out to me around 2:30 in the morning.
Good Lord.
Stay up late. And I'm fine with Coach, man. I like him. I respect him. I think the world of him. And so I'm fine, and I'm not here to perpetuate the narrative of what occurred on Saturday.
How great is that? He was probably watching a Western. He was up at 2:30 in the morning. The guy's making a phone call. Maybe we've got to stop getting mad at the kids when they're, you know, these stories. Well, they were out at 3:00 in the morning. Well, what the hell? The coach is up till 2:30. Yikes. Anyway, but I thought Forbes handled it well. I mean, he was diplomatic, but he said what he had to say, which is, I'm gonna say, even though I have respect for you as a coach, I'm not just going to let you say things that I think are denigrating my program. But I don't know. It's a bizarre circumstance right now. It really is. What did you want me to check my phone for?
No. We got to take a break. And then on the other side, we'll do a little bit of U of L FSU this weekend. You need to remind everybody that it is Valentine's coming up. And
oh, yeah.
There's a certain place that might be able to help.
Here we go. You're getting mad at me again because I'm on multiple phone systems here again. So it's not on that phone. By definition, it's on this phone. Speaking of that, I'm buying time here. Watched a TV show last night where a person said, isn't it fascinating that the three questions we always ask, what, when, and where, if you change the T in all of those, if you change the W in all of those to T's, you answer all the questions.
That...
Blow your mind.
Whoa.
Right?
That's crazy. And there. That's pretty nuts. That's pretty nuts.
Right?
Almost as nuts as the food that we got from Melt 502. Thanks to...
Oh, of all days, not to come to the studio.
Yeah. Looks great.
Oh, dude. They have a cheeseburger egg roll. Oh, slap your mama good.
Yes.
Thanks to Murph and the Melt 502 team for bringing by lunch to the ESPN Louisville Studios. Order your big game egg roll party trays for this Sunday. 12 different savory and dessert egg rolls to choose from. 25 rolls for just $129.99. That's good. That'll definitely feed an entire party. Delicious, delicious stuff there. Call in and place your order before Wednesday at 5 p.m. and you'll get $25 off that order. Located,
that's outstanding.
Oh, absolutely. Located in the heart of Fern Creek, right behind Moby Dick at 6318 Bardstown Road. Building is still under construction, but Melt 502 is still open Tuesday to Saturday, 12 to 9. Order online at melt502.com. Seriously, the cheeseburger egg rolls. Did you have one, Coach?
I did not.
Fabulous.
Excuse me. I'm heading that way right now.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Go grab one.
Good reason. That is one of the most creative menus. They really are delicious and very, very different. No question about that. Talking about people that are heroes, and they're heroes to us at lunchtime. Well, the people who are heroes to all of us at Valentine's Day, want to remind you, it's right around the corner. If you want to be a real hero this Valentine's Day, you got to get to Genesis Diamonds. Genesis makes it easy with the total romance package. You get jewelry, flowers, candy, and dinner out, all as part of the key ingredients for a memorable Valentine's celebration. Well, how's it work? Well, you buy any piece of jewelry for just $99 or more. Genesis will give you a bouquet of flowers from Nance and Craft Florists, a gift card towards dinner at Brasserie Provence, and then they also get chocolate. I mean, candy. Fantastic. You can't beat that with it. I mean, heck, take any one of those things. It's a nice gift. Put them all together. You are a hero. Genesis specializes in romance. They have the lasting and timeless gifts that reflect and celebrate your love. This year, they pulled together some wonderful Valentine's gift ideas. Rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, bands. Affordable quality gifts that'll be a hit with the special person on your list. Of course, if you're getting engaged this Valentine's, well, say no more. Genesis will create the ring of her dreams with our dazzling GIA diamonds and designer mountings. Unlimited possibilities. So bring the sparkle and the romance with one-stop shopping at Genesis. $99 or more, and boom. Flowers, chocolate, dinner, and the fabulous piece of jewelry that is the center of the whole celebration. Happy Valentine's Day from Genesis Diamonds, Shelbyville Road Plaza, next to Trader Joe's. Disclaimer comes your way in this form. There are limited quantities, and you need to see the store for details. Back with more. Is Coach Liebman sticking around, or he got to go?
Yeah, he's back getting Melt 502 right now. But, yeah, he'll be around for another, like, 15, 20 minutes.
And then, fabulous.
He's got things to do.
He's got things to do. We got things to do. And hopefully your Monday's going well. Stay with us on ESPN 680-1057.
Hi, Kentuckiana. Scott Davenport of Bellarmine Basketball here. I want to share with you my experience with the amazing team at Fitness Market. When Bellarmine needed an upgrade to one of our team training rooms, I knew Fitness Market was where I needed to go. When I visited their showroom, I was absolutely blown away at the huge selection of fitness equipment that they had in stock. Everything we possibly could need or you could possibly want in your workout room. What was even better was the personal service I received. As you know, I'm big on family and team, and that is why I love shopping there. It is truly a family first business, and they made me feel part of the Fitness Market family and team. As soon as I walk through the door, the Whiters and their employees go out of their way to make customers happy, and they will do the same for you. Whether you need equipment for a large commercial space like we did at Bellarmine, or you just need something small for your home workout facility, go see the great team over at Fitness Market. I promise you, you will be as amazed as I was. They are all about team and customer service.
Metro College is a program that helps students pay for tuition,
and I didn't believe it.
You have to work third shift 5 days a week. It's a great and rewarding thing when you graduate. I would do it all over again, just like I just did.
You know those buddies who magically become medical professionals when you're not at the top of your game? The ones who say,
"Come on, muscle through it,"
but then also say,
"Hey, you should probably see my specialist,"
or surgery or pain meds? It's almost always false, false, and false. Athletico's physical therapists, the same therapists who work with professional athletes, can tackle those little aches and pains from the start, before they become big ones. So next time, don't believe everything you hear. Instead, start with Athletico. Schedule your free assessment at athletico.com.